Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Daniel Patrick Egan is on a phone line, journalist in residence for the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, also the author of Death and Life of the Great Lakes. He's been on with us before talking about the Great Lakes, and here he is again. Hi, Dan, you're on WGN. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
What a piece in the Times the other day. I got a lot of email from friends saying, hey, did you read this? Did you read this? What did you say about the health or the depth of the water on Lake Michigan, especially around Chicago?
You're talking water levels?
Yeah.
Chicago is uniquely vulnerable just because it is in such a low-lying area. And Lake Michigan, you know, it needs to stay where it's been for the last 300 years or so, and there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And trouble can come from both directions. It can come from high water or low water, and we're just coming out of a high water cycle, and maybe we're headed back toward record lows that we hit in 2013, or maybe we bounce back up. But if we go a foot or two higher than we were last May or this time last year, that's trouble.
Well, I noticed last year we talked about it a lot. I think we talked about it with you as well, how the water was over the lip on Lake Michigan on this concrete apron they have that runs the length of the city. It had come over that, and so now where people are supposed to be riding their bikes or walking or jogging along the lake, there was a few inches of water. But now, I was there at Montrose a couple weeks ago, and it's way down. It's so much lower, and that's within a matter of less than a year.
Oh, yeah, I think it's down about a foot since October, and I wouldn't know how far in a year, but it has dropped fast. And that's what these hydrologists and climatologists are saying, that things are getting a little, you know, the lakes have always cycled. They've always gone up and they've always gone down. And importantly, in, you know, our sense of history in the last 150 years, they've stayed within 3 feet of their average level, 3 feet above or 3 feet below for a 6 foot swing. Well, they broke a record in 2013 for low water, and the high water record was set, I think it was in October of 86. But last summer, we had record highs for those summer months. Normally, that kind of swing would take decades. This took 7 years, and there's nothing dictating that, you know, it had to stop where it did. And the real critical linchpin point in all of this is the control works at Navy Pier right out your window. You know, if the water were to breach those gates, then there's really, it's just going to go through Chicago and do what it does on its way to the Mississippi.
So you also mentioned there's a scenario where the river could reverse course. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, and that's really what this story hinges on. It was this moment back in May 2020. When, you know, when things get really bad in Chicago, there's always a last resort in terms of flooding, and that is open those gates at Navy Pier and also the gates down on the Calumet River, the O'Brien Lock, and the control works up on the North Channel. Open them up and let the river flow, the water flow backwards into the lake, and you're sending a lot of bad stuff into the lake because there's sewage mixed into it that's coming from, you know, sewer overflows. But that was always an option. To, you know, it's better than flooding houses and city streets. What happened in May was when it was time to open the gates, because you had Lower Wacker Drive underwater, the river walk was more like a river wade or river swim, and
yeah.
Here's Willis Tower lost power. So that flooding was pretty severe at that moment, and the, you know, plan has always been open the gates. Well, Lake Michigan was so high at that time, if you open those gates, Lake Michigan would have come into the river instead of the river going into the lake. And that's just a reflection of this razor's edge that Chicago and other Great Lakes cities are on. They need the water to be where it's been for the past 300 years, and the water may have other ideas.
You described the reasons for this, and it all starts with climate change, melting snow caps, evaporation rates as well. What's the worst-case scenario? If I had to pick one of these extremes, which would be better for us, the lake being low or the lake being high?
That's a good question. I mean, I guess you'd want low water, because high water low water is a problem in terms of drinking water intakes, navigation,
Real estate. I mean, it's weird. Those people that have lakefront houses, not that, you know, they're my first concern, but I mean, literally the view that the kind of city we have would change if the water went way down.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely wouldn't. It wouldn't just be Chicago. It would be Milwaukee and, you know, Toronto, all the cities around the lakes. But the high water, and what happened with this high water episode was, you always hear about the polar vortex. Well, that's a normal phenomenon. What happened was the polar vortex got wobbly. It's normally a really tight whirl of cold air around the Arctic. Well, sometimes that tight whirl slackens and sends cold air south. And when that happens, the lakes get a lot of ice, and that stops or camps evaporation. And so that allows the lake to really climb. And so, you know, nobody's made the direct link between this destabilization of the polar vortex, if you will, and climate change. But the evidence points to it being a factor, and I'm sure we'll be learning more about that in the coming years. But if when that vortex goes wobbly, that can spell trouble for Chicago and the greater Great Lakes.
Is there anything we should be doing as a city about this? Anything we can do about this?
Well, that's one of the stressful and depressing things about writing a story like that. There is no, you know, switch to flip. There's no magic bullet. It's more recognizing what the future could bring and armoring or stealing or protecting yourself in any manner that you can. And that doesn't necessarily mean rip-wrapping the shoreline of Chicago 20 feet high and then have it all, you know, need to be go
way down. Yeah.
When the water goes down, it's looking at the lake, I think, a little differently and a little more suspiciously and realizing that it doesn't have to stay where it's been for the history of Chicago.
It's a great resource. I think that water is the new petroleum, or is going to be. And I've always thought that Chicago is looking better and better like a good place to live, not only for climate reasons, but also because of the resource that Lake Michigan and the other lakes are. I want to stay with that, but I think we need to be cognizant of these things you're talking about.
Absolutely. I mean, Chicago is a great city, and I mean, it is an attractive place to be. And what I'm talking about in this story, I mean, it was a moment that happened a year ago, but what I think about is, okay, we got 6 feet in 7 years. When they talk about ocean, you know, seaside, ocean level rising, they're talking like 6 or 7 or maybe 8 feet over, and that would be, you know, at the far end of the estimate, over the course of a century. We got this in 7 years. Yeah. What's it going to look like in 7 decades?
Yeah.
We need to think.
Read Daniel Patrick Egan's piece in the New York Times, A Battle Between a Great City and a Great Lake. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Daniel. Thanks for your expertise. Thanks for your reporting.
I appreciate your interest. Thanks a lot.